everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is November 11, 2017. It's Veterans Day. And before we get going here, I got a whole bunch of stuff to go over today. But first off, I start my day with CEFCO coffee. I go to Hilltop CEFCO here in Cameron. I get my cup of Morning Joe, which I'm showing you on the screen right now. And they've got a special going on. They've got breakfast sandwiches and a medium coffee for $3. Go over there to CEFCO Hilltop in Cameron. Say hi to the ladies and get yourself some food, smokes, paper, whatever it takes to get your day going. And we're simulcasting on this station here, 105.1 FM KMIL, and also in Rockdale at 98.5 KRXT. So enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said, it's Veterans Day. And what is Veterans Day? A lot of people will get it mixed up with Memorial Day and all that. So I want to clarify what it is. Veterans Day is an official United States public holiday observed annually on November 11th that honors military veterans, that is, persons who served in the United States Armed Forces. Now, true veterans do not desire to be recognized. They served to serve. They served for duty, honor, country. However, each veteran will recognize the other and thank them for their service. That is what I wish to do right now by playing the national anthem. This version will be sung by Whitney Houston. I saw her sing this anthem, and she did it beautifully and with passion, and not one person took a knee. God bless America and every service member, past, present, and future, too. Thank you for your service. Welcome back, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be a part of the show today, the number here at the studio is 254-697-6633. You can give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or just go directly to the website aaronsgunshop.com. We have a lot of things going on the show today. Today, three stories of self-defense from the American Rifleman's Armed Citizens column. These stories are from the current issue, November 2017. So if you got yours, turn to page 10 and you can follow along. In my license to carry attorney segment, I will talk with attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson about the liabilities of private sales when it comes to guns. What are the risks and how do you minimize those risks? My topic of interest segment will go over the upcoming events with Aaron's that you can all become part of. And right after that, and before the top 11 o'clock hour, Janae Goodman has another tactical snacking tip for you. This week, it's about leftovers. Leftover candy, that is, from Halloween. Pies, cookies, and so much more. At 11, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the epitome of encyclopedia, the connoisseur of common sense, and the man of manners. Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement. Today's product spotlight brought to you by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer is the Remington RM380 pistol. Go to aaronsgunshop.com's Facebook page to look at the photo of the RM380. Then call ANC Firearms at 254-983-4417 to order yours. I'll give you details about this handgun right after the voice of law enforcement. Now, I have a very interesting guest today. His name is Kobe Breen. He's the training instructor for ALERT, A-L-E-R-R-T. That stands for Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training. Now, Kobe will be talking to us about what to do when it comes to an active shooter, both on the police side and our side. This will be very interesting. And finally, Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, will be here giving us words of wisdom and methods on how to defend ourselves against an aggressor. So, strap yourselves in. Get pen and paper ready, turn up the volume, and let's get this show rocking here. We're going to start rocking with true stories. And once again, it comes out of the American Rifleman current issue. Story number one reads as follows. Getting shot didn't initially stop a South Carolina man from making more trouble, but it eventually did. The agitator's spree started in Lexington, South Carolina, when he threatened people with a pressure washer. One of the would-be victims was having none of that, so he responded by shooting the mischief maker in the chest. The rabble-rouser fled after being wounded, intent on making a getaway before the people he had allegedly threatened called the police. As the bad guy staggered down the street, passerby in a pickup truck stopped to see if he needed help. The assailant showed his gratitude by reportedly punching a female passenger in the face and dragging her out of the truck. He then shoved out the driver and made his escape. Moments later, he crashed the truck. The suspect was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. He faces charges related to multiple assaults and vehicular theft. The armed citizen was found to have acted in self-defense. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I got a problem here with this story. And it has to do with the armed citizen this time. In my opinion, it was an unnecessary use of force defending himself against a pressure washer. Have you ever seen a pressure washer? The ones at car washes are mounted to the wall and only work when you put money in the machine. The portable ones need a power source, are bulky, and are limited in their range of effectiveness. This armed citizen could have simply gone the other way, stay out of range, and just called the police. It is your host's opinion that the armed citizen escalated this situation. This was not a crossed the red line moment. It was a, hey, I'm calling the police on you jerk kind of moment. Remember, just because you have a gun doesn't mean you have to use it. I believe this is one of those times. All right, story number two. Little Rock, Arkansas police were searching for a suspected robber whose theft was thwarted because his would-be victim, a 57-year-old woman, pulled a gun and shooed him away. The armed citizen probably thought the prospect of being accosted in broad daylight was slim, but that doesn't mean she wasn't glad that she was carrying her handgun in her purse that day when she went grocery shopping. As she was trying to unlock her car to load up her groceries, a strange man approached and made a grab for her purse. Before the thief could get to the handbag off her shoulder, she withdrew the concealed carry handgun. The mere sight of a gun was enough to send the bad guy running. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, this story tells me a lot about the 57-year-old woman. One, she has the confident attitude of carrying a gun with her. Two, she is aware of her surroundings. Three, she had her hand at the ready to draw her weapon. And four, she's a nice lady because she only shooed the bad guy away instead of blowing him away. Only thing I don't like is that the gun was in her purse. Purses are detachable from your body, which means they can be taken away more easily. So try to keep the gun on your person. Story number three. Joel, we're going to run long on this segment. Opportunities didn't wait to strike after Hurricane Harvey hit Texas in August. While most sought shelter, those with criminal mindset saw the aftermath of the storm as an invitation to loot businesses or burglarize homes. Thus was the case in Corpus Christi, Texas, when a homeowner shot an intruder in the head after the suspect broke into his home shortly after the Category 4 hurricane made landfall. The alleged burglar was taken to the hospital. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, the man's house is probably damaged, flooded, and who knows what else. Then to add insult to injury, this scumbag tries to loot the man's house. I believe the homeowner is a trained shooter. Most people aim for the chest. Most of those hit low due to anticipation of the shot. This guy was shot in the head. I don't think it was an accident. Instead of compost for brains, this guy now has lead for brains. And that's my commentary on that. Okay, let me read to you this week's opinion piece. I titled it, "It Could Take Weeks, Months, Years." Ladies and gentlemen, I'm 54 years old. I started shooting a gun when I was 4. So I guess you could say I've been training for 50 years, and to this day, I have not shot anyone. I hope I never shoot anyone. I will if I have to, but the goal is not getting myself in a position where I have to. So on one side of the coin, you could say that all my training was for nothing because I never put it to use. But on the other side of the coin, you could say my training has worked perfectly because I have not needed to shoot anyone. As the old saying goes, we sweat hard off the battlefield, so we bleed less when we're on it. Or something like that, but you get my point. In the area of self-defense, there can be no shortcuts. The training must be done whether we use the training or not. We may never use it, but we must be ready. I've read this before, but I'm going to read it again because it's that good. This is a quote from John C. Maxwell's book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. Its quote starts like this. Ability isn't created in a crisis. It only becomes seen. Everything you have done in practices and the practices you have failed to do come to a head when you're under pressure. The last thing we want to do in a crisis situation is fall apart due to a lack of training. Training never ends when it comes to survival. With the latest church shooting here in Texas, I'm seeing the lack of preparedness all around. People, places, institutions, churches, etc. are scrambling to get caught up. Preparedness is like concrete. The longer it's in place, the more solid it gets. If you haven't poured a foundation of preparedness yet, I highly advise you do so and give it time to set. You'll be building a structure of security, and we all know that structures need a good foundation if they're to stay standing. Get started now because, like I said, it could take weeks, months, or years before you might have to use your skill of survival and self-defense. The goal is to never having to use these skills, but if you do, use them with extreme efficiency. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Slight little glitch here. We're going to be doing a repeat of a conversation I had with Attorney Extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson on Penal Code 931, Justifiable Force, may be applicable in our daily lives. So go ahead, Joel, play that, and we'll see you on the other side of this.
couple weeks ago.
All right, Ross, you heard me read Penal Code 931. You heard all the stuff. We talked about it before the show. You know the angles that I'm coming at here. And there was one part here. It says, or attempted to enter. Let me read the first part of the sentence. It goes, knew or had reason to believe that the person against whom the force of deadly force was used unlawfully and with force entered or attempted to enter. Let me set you up, and maybe you can explain something here. I tell a lot of people, you know, if you're squared away and prepared and you've practiced, you're going to be calmer than somebody who hasn't. So here comes somebody up to your front porch, and they're being aggressive. You don't know what they're going to do, but they're still on the other side of the door. And you've called 911, and you're standing there, and you got your shotgun, your pistol, whatever. And it's like, I tell people, you know where the person's at. They're on the other side of the door. Who wants to shoot anybody? I don't want to shoot anybody. I'll shoot if I have to. But they're still on the other side of the door. You just stand there, and as soon as the door is breached, if necessary, then, okay, they entered your home, go. But this one says attempted. I always thought there's this fine line. You got to be careful when and when you cannot shoot. Because you always hear this thing, you shoot them on the porch and then you drag them inside. Well, if you hear that, you should have waited until he was on the inside first.
I agree that this could maybe be twisted by some prosecutor at some point. But the way I read it, and we have to read the statutes reasonably under the reasonable language, so we don't try to give it some sort of meaning that would be uncommon to the common person. I think when looking at it, to me, if somebody's trying to break in my house and I don't know this person and they're on the other side of the door and they just haven't made it through yet, I'm probably going to shoot. Now, I see what you're saying that, and we've talked about a case where, if you remember, I didn't talk so much about the attempting, but I talked about with force. And I talked about how that can be ambiguous because it says the person had reason to believe that the person against whom the force was used unlawfully and with force, right? Or was attempting to unlawfully and with force. So my what more concerns me is the force part as opposed to being on the outside of the door. I think if somebody's trying to break in, I'm gonna shoot. I think that most prosecutors are gonna look at it that way.
I've read a lot of stories like NRAs where they're busting through and the homeowner shoots through the door and no charges are there, but you just hear these things where, well, then just drag them in, which puts into question, well, are you right or not? And then you hear other people say that because they're not in your perimeter, you're really not a threat.
So, well, the tense of the words, too. So unlawfully and with force entered, right? So the legislature clearly made entering, right, a problem. So, and then it's using basically present tense. I'm not going to get into present participle and whatever, whatnot, but it's using more present tense at this time, attempting to unlawfully enter unlawfully. So they haven't made it in yet. So the legislature has clearly, right, been inclusive, right, of not having entered yet more than just entering the house, right? So I think that attempting to enter, right, would be on the outside of the door. Now, we also talked, you can't be stupid. Right, you can't be trying to shoot the mailman.
There seems to be
for coming in.
That, though.
I'm maybe politically incorrect, but stupid people make me money. Okay, that's the bottom line. Okay, and a lot of times there wouldn't be as much need for attorneys, right? For sure, if people weren't as stupid as a lot of times they are. Okay, and so, I mean, you can't be going and shooting the mailman. I'm sure that there's going to be some exception if you try to do that. But we're talking, if you're at home and some person you don't know is trying to get into your door, right, that's a problem. And I don't see why you have to wait for that person to get in and be a threat to you before you use protection.
Okay, I want to be clear on something. Ladies and gentlemen, when I bring up these questions, it has nothing to do with, Matt, you're an idiot. No, it has to do with I'm extremely smart and sharp and in tune with what's going on here.
These are not dumb questions at all.
No, not at all, because I know what can happen in a courtroom. I know. I've come from a family of attorneys. I've been all through it my whole entire life with attorneys, and I know how things can be spun. Prosecuting attorneys do not like to lose, okay? They're going to do whatever they can to spin it. And I look at these things, I say, well, there's a little loophole, so let's just talk it through. You may go ahead and shoot through the door anyway, but at least I know, back of my head, that's there, but I overrided that thought process because I felt it was necessary at this particular moment.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I mean, I'm not saying that will never become an issue. I just think that I'm pretty confident that if they're on the outside of the door, right, in that scenario, you're okay. Now, if they're on the sidewalk, you know, not the sidewalk, but maybe the step in front of the door, not at the house yet, and they're just looking around to see if anybody's home. Are they looking for you? Or, I mean,
I'll tell you, with somebody who's trained like myself, if somebody comes up to the door, I've got my gun in my hand. I know what I'm doing. I know where my people are, my family is. I know entry points and windows. I know, I got it all down. I'm like, okay, guy comes up. He's on the door. He's being threatened. I'm only speaking to him through the door because I don't want to shoot to my door. It costs money. I don't want to clean up my porch full of blood that leaves stains. I don't want to potentially be an attorney to say, yeah, you were right. That costs me money. That changes my lifestyle. I don't want to do that. So I think to myself, no, I'll just wait, and maybe the cops will come quick enough, and they'll take care of it.
Right, and I mean, but are you going to have time? I just think sometimes it's unreasonable, because I think about myself, and I've been in situations that I've had a pretty colorful, right, life, I think. But I've been in situations that have been scary, and I even pause. Every once in a while, I remember pausing in the situation when I should have been doing something else, right? Should have been reacting in a different kind of way. And I think first you're going to pause and try to see what's going on.
That's right.
Right. And then what are you going to do? Are you going to go call the police? You've already paused and give him time to enter. And so then if you're going to go call the police, by that time he's going to be in the house.
No, we just change up the scenario. I'm saying somebody's around, you call up the police, and they're the person on the other side of the door. You've got your gun in hand. And so,
but if you're,
who
if
knows, maybe the police will come before you have to do anything. Am I saying don't do anything? No, I'm not saying that. So don't twist my words. Not you, just whoever's trying to twist my words. Okay? What I'm trying to get at is just think it through, all these different types of scenarios. If you don't have to pull the trigger, don't. It all falls back on your training. The more trained you are, the more time you have to respond, not react, respond in a proper manner. Go ahead.
Now, I remember Rick, too, I think he talked about some cases with this statute, but I want to go back to as well that one case where it was a bar joint, you know, a beer joint, and they were closed. And a guy walks in, the door was unlocked, okay, but they were closed. And this guy and the bartender clearly did not want this guy in there, and they don't like the guy. In fact, I think he knew that he wasn't really supposed to be there, okay, but he came in through the door, and there ends up being a fight, okay, and the guy raises self-defense, and he didn't get it because the gentleman didn't break in with force, if you remember this case. And I kind of thought, I really did not distinguish that one from others, and that's what bothers me so much about the force part is, well, what if they? How do you ever prove that unless they actually break the door? What if they're using the technique with the, you know, I forget what you call
the locks?
Yeah, Jimmy and the locks, and getting the door open. You'll never know whether the person actually used force. So there's going to be a problem with you showing force, probably in some situations. What if you left the back door open and they walk through the back door?
See what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen? But what you have here is potential for it to go everywhere. So do I say you're paralyzed in life and don't do anything? Of course not. All I'm saying is, if you're going to carry the gun, or if you are going to put yourself in a position where you will defend, there's some people out there who just hunker down in the bedroom, call the police, and just wait. What happens? Okay, that ain't me. But
again, I think we have to, like I said, read this reasonably. And so I think if somebody, the difference between a house and that bar is one is public and one is not. And so people would generally walk up and walk in the bar unless the door was locked. And so they wouldn't do that at a house, especially at 2 a.m, like what happened in that case. And so I think that may be some distinguishing factors. And so I think if somebody comes even in an open door in your house, that is using force to break the barrier of the home. Okay, but again, I'm just saying that is a scary word for me, because I feel like that could be twisted. And I mean, we could probably go back with some common law concepts of burglary, what force means in that aspect, and that doesn't always mean actually breaking something. You can use force to break the barrier, but why not in that other case?
That's why I promote and push being prepared and trained, because the more prepared you are and the more trained you are, the more time you have, the more avenues you have of getting out of the situation. And I give this example all the time. I've got me and a petite young lady. We both have Glock 17 pistols, 9mm pistols, 17 rounds in it. And let's say we have two twin brothers and they're 300 pounds and they want to rape us both, okay? Bubba number one wants to rape me, Bubba number two wants to rape her, and they're 24 feet away. and she empties 17 rounds into this guy at 24 feet, and I do the same thing. Who's going to go to jail? Probably me, because I'm the experienced one. I got all these this training. I literally, in my personal humble opinion...
How do you know that they're coming to do that?
Because they're starting to walk. They're starting to charge, okay?
Where are you?
No, that's my point is, she was in fear for her life because of her inexperience. Because you're trained and prepared, you say, okay, I got this. I know how to handle my weapon. I know when the distance is that I feel there's nothing else I can do. So until that line has been crossed by this guy, I can run away, talk him down, use threat as justifiable force. Because I'm trained, I got more options available than somebody who hasn't trained and is freaking out.
But if a person has the right to be present at the location where the deadly force is used, and you haven't provoked the other person, and you're not otherwise engaged in criminal activity, you are not required to retreat.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is,
in determining, you know, whether you get that justification, whether deadly force is necessary, if you fall under what I just read, right, they cannot even consider your failure to retreat. Okay, and I'm not saying juries do what they, you know, a lot of times they do whatever they want to do, right?
I'm not arguing with you on that. All I'm saying is,
but
what you're saying is actually absolutely correct.
They couldn't,
I know, but
the thing is, what was the footage, right, before you felt it was immediately necessary?
Which comes back to my point, the more trained you are, the closer the person can come and you still have options. So if somebody's 24 feet away from me, I know I've got a certain, I'm not going to tell you what my perimeter is, but I've got a certain distance that I'm going to try and talk you down. I lost my terminology. I want you to talk them down, run away, use unarmed defensive tactics, whatever I can do before I got to squeeze that trigger. I do not want to squeeze a trigger. And being trained like I am has given me tons of options. So if you want to avoid having only one option with more potential of problems, then get yourself trained.
I can see the distance at some point being an issue. I think, though, if you fall under that presumptive section and then they cannot consider your failure to retreat, there's going to be a problem with the prosecution, right? What that distance is, yeah, I think there's an issue. But again, you're going to have a presumption that your belief is reasonable, that the force was immediately necessary if you meet one of those things. Now, if you're out on the street, even like some of these cases that you read, situations that you read before my segment comes on, you're not mine, but the attorney segment, right, with me and Rick. And so I think you're not always going to be in a presumptive situation, though. I don't think that the individual... Maybe.
Well, I submit to your extraordinary.
There's been a couple of situations when you've read where it wasn't a presumptive situation. So it wasn't presumed that the person would have had a reasonable belief, right? Because they weren't close to their car, and it wasn't a sure deal that they were committing or attempting to commit an aggravated kidnapping, murder, sexual assault, aggravated assault until a later time, and it could be said that they had provoked it at that point. There was a couple of situations
we can go back and forth on this for a long time.
That's a good segue to the very next subsection that we were going to talk about, which is when it's not justified in response to verbal provocation alone.
Yeah, I got all these highlighted. Let's talk about each one and give us some clarification on it.
And so, yeah, that first one, that verbal provocation alone, the use of force against another is not justified. I mean, you cannot use force, even deadly or non-deadly force. You can't use either one, right, in response to somebody else's verbal provocation. Now, this is sort of a convoluted area. We spoke about before how pulling your firearm is a use of force, okay? But it's not deadly force because we've said there's 9.4 of the same...
Well, it says right there in the penal code, a threat chapter. As justifiable force.
Right, a threat... can be justifiable force. A threat can be force. And simply using the threat that you will use deadly force, right, does not constitute deadly force, right? So it's just non-deadly force. And so at what point does the threat become force? But at the same time, if you pull in your weapon, that's an actual conduct, okay? And so, yes, that is a threat, right? But I think what this is talking about, I think that's why the legislature was actually clear here. It says verbal provocation. They didn't say threat. Right, they said verbal provocation alone, and so if the guy's saying I'm gonna kill you, okay, I would say probably that by itself, right, doesn't give you the opportunity just to start blasting away. Well, he said he was gonna kill me, so I killed him first. Okay, the thing is if it's only verbal. Now the trick is that threats like that that are by themselves can be used as evidence, okay, to support your theory. And it used to be in the 1920s and then in 1974 Penal Code, they used to actually allow, right, some definitions and instructions in there about a verbal threat. Okay, but now we don't allow those instructions anymore. We only allow you to argue that to the jury and to use that as evidence in your case. But there has to be some other kind of act. For instance, there was a situation when Pastor Peacock was out in the road with his wife Sunshine in a parking lot, and they had just got introduced to the person in that case. It was a defendant. Okay, and the defendant was sitting in the parking lot. The pastor and his wife turn around and go into church. And then the defendant's brother and his sister-in-law pull up in the vehicle, and they have a really bad relationship. But they start arguing about his gambling activity at the truck. And next thing you know, right, he's stepping out of the vehicle and he's pulling the trigger. And he gets convicted of murder in this case. And so nobody really heard a lot that was happening at the truck. But what was said was, is that his brother basically said, I'm going to kill you, okay? I'm going to stop you today. And so, I mean, it was sort of an immediate threat. He was saying it was going to happen today, okay? And it was conflicting evidence, but the defendant said he reached inside the truck. The trial court properly let him use a self-defense instruction. Now, he lost. The jury didn't buy it. The jury didn't think it was necessary, right? It wasn't reasonably necessary. His brother was unarmed. But his brother knew he had a gun in his truck, and it was in the door. And so when he reached for the door, he was entitled to a self-defense instruction. And so, there was another weird case, and I really am surprised that they allowed the defense instruction. There was a man and wife having some problems, and the wife was separated, and she was not, you know, she was not very good person, okay? But it sounds like she was kind of doing him wrong, and she had kind of held a lot of things over his head, and basically she had a bunch of his jewelry, and she was like, but I want my jacket back. So if you bring my jacket over to the apartments where I'm staying, I'll give you your jewelry back. So he brought the jacket over there, and he comes, and she's like, well, I'm not coming outside, and I'm not giving you your jewelry, and I want you to leave, and you need to leave now. She never opened the door. It was all behind the door. She says, I want you to leave, and you're never allowed to. Yeah, now I want you to go, and I want you to drop my jacket off at the front desk where my sister is. And he's like, no, I mean, come on. He's trying to work it out. Well, she says, if you don't go right now, I'm going to start blasting through this door. And I have the gun that I stole from you in our house. And you know, it's a big gun, and you know that I'm going to, you know, kill you. And just starts going off telling that. So instead of leaving, he breaks in the door. I'm not lying to you. I was really surprised with what I'm about to tell you. So he breaks in the door, and he says, I saw her hands up, right? And I didn't have any intention to hurt her or anything. Right, I was just trying to stop her from shooting and, you know, talk to her, and she has her hands up, and so that's when I shot, and I shot her twice. He shot her twice, right? And the trial court denied, right, the self-defense instruction, which I'm not going to comment. I think that may not have been a wrong decision, but it goes up to the Court of Appeals, and they affirm that, and then it goes to Texas Court of Appeals, and they reverse. And they say no, there should have been a self-defense instruction. Because he didn't go there to provoke anybody. And this goes into provocation, but it still goes to the verbal threat. I mean, what else? I don't really... What was his justification for breaking in the apartment?
Stupidity.
So this verbal threat, there was more to it, right? There was her verbal. He knew that she had that gun. He knew what she was capable of. He's threatened her. She had threatened him with a gun before. He knew she was capable of shooting it. He knew that she was willing to do it, and that she would do it, and that she was very capable to kill him, right? So it's possible that he did have a right to shoot. Now, if anybody's listening, I'm not saying that
Is anybody listening? Thousands of people are listening.
No, I'm saying if anybody's listening and saying to themselves, you know, you're crazy for supporting this, I'm not supporting this guy, right? I'm not saying that the Court of Criminal Appeals is supporting him either. Right. I don't think any jury in the world is going to buy that, right? And I don't think that, you know, that's going to win. All the court criminals
is guaranteed with this. Around. That's why I wanted to give people an idea of all the different out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's hit a few more of these things.
And consent, we talked about that.
Let me read it. It says, if the actor consented to the exact force used or attempted by the other. What the hell is that?
Mutual combat. It's like, so if there's been wanting to get it on for the longest time, and they say, you fight? And he says, yeah, let's go. How you want to do this? You know, knuckles, all go. Okay, well, let's do it. Okay, if they agree to that, and the consent doesn't necessarily have to be you know, expressed in language, it can be based on the circumstances. But you're going to have some problems if, you know, he gets beat up and he goes to the cops first. So I'll just let you know that.
Okay, so it's not justified if the next one, if the actor provoked the other's use of attempted use of unlawful force, unless
the actor abandons that encounter or clearly communicates to the other person, right, his intent, right, reasonably believing that it cannot safely be abandoned. In other words, that's like if we start fighting, and I come at you and say, "Dude, I'm sorry, I quit. I'm sorry. Like, this is wrong. I quit. I stop." Okay. And then you're like, "No, you done started it now. Let's finish it." And you start coming after me.
You hear that all the time.
I can probably defend myself.
Right? How do you do that in a court case when maybe you provoked it at first, then you say, "I'm sorry," and then he's coming back and now it's self-defense, but...
Well, this is not saying just because you get this, you win. They're just saying in some situations that they're going to let the jury decide if what you did is justifiable, and if it's not, well, it could be, because here's two, like what if you go and you start a fight and then you try to finish and then he pulls out a gun?
Well, obviously I would.
And then you shoot him right now. I mean,
there's going to be hell to pay no matter what,
but at the same time, you may have provoked it, but you had no intention of going into some deadly weapons, you know? And so if he pull out a gun, you're like, whoa, chill, man. Like, that's not, I was mad, you know. I thought we handled this like, you know, I don't want to be sexist, you know, but I'm sure it's be said, handle this like men, you know. You don't, you know, and I didn't want to fight with deadly weapons or anything like that. I'm out, you know. And he pulls this, they're gonna say, well, they could say, if this wasn't in here, you provoked it, right? But you've tried to abandon it and get away from it, right? But he's still saying, no, I'm gonna kill you now. You'd probably be able to pull your weapon, okay? And so, again, that's going to be a fact issue, and that's why you shouldn't be doing that, because you're going to.
Is that how B comes into play here? The other nevertheless continues or attempts to use.
Yeah. So it says and. So you have to have both of those. And the other person nevertheless continues or attempts to use the unlawful force against you. Okay. So I say you, the person being the defendant. Okay, is going to be the one that says, I have, you know, is going to have to abandon it, right? Or going to clearly communicate the intent to abandon, even though you may not have abandoned it yet. Okay, you may not have gotten out. Like, what if you're already in a headlock or something, but you're like, dude, stop, you know, and you really haven't gotten out of the situation yet, but you're clearly communicating to the other person that you want out, right? And they keep going forward with whatever they're doing.
Okay,
and so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of traps with this one. The next one is important.
Hold on. We're going to hit this one, and then I want to touch on that, and we'll prep it for next week. But let me read it to you. This is 5. If the actor sought an explanation from or discussion with the other person concerning the actor's differences with the other person while the actor was carrying a weapon in violation of Section 4602 or 4605. Huh?
Yeah, okay. So this is the come to Jesus meeting provision. Okay, it's like when you're mad at somebody, and it's sort of in line with provoking what we call it is provoking the difficulty, right? The difficulty, the situation, right? It sort of falls in line with that. Okay, but the legislature wanted to make clear, we don't want you going into a heated situation, right, with a weapon. Okay, and now this doesn't. Now it is clear, and I've seen some courts trying to imply that you can't go with a weapon, right? But that's really not what this says, right? This says carrying a weapon in violation of Section 4602, okay, or possessing or transporting a weapon in violation of 4605, okay? And so it's talking about those two specific provisions. So just having a firearm on you, right, in a situation where you're having a talk, you know, you're having a talk with somebody, okay, that's, you're in a disagreement, mm-hmm, with them, and you're going to try to work it out, right? That doesn't mean that you've violated this section, okay? Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that your actions are not justified, okay? And so I want to make clear, we talked about 4602, right? It's just the unlawful carrying weapons statute, right? Yep. The person,
and you can check all these out on Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel. We've got all the recorded interviews, all the different penal codes. Check it out; it's great study material. So check that out at Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube.
Right, which talks about too, like, you can't have a weapon or a handgun in an open unless you're licensed under the government code, and And you got to be on your own premises or inside or directly in route to your motor vehicle, right, when you have a handgun, illegal knife, or a club, unless you're licensed, right, under the government code. And so that would be a violation of that section. The other one is the 46-05, and I think I printed that. It's just basically the explosive weapon, machine gun, short barrel firearm or firearm silencer, bloody, you know.
You're getting a lot of people aroused out there like those kind of guns, so yeah. We better be careful on that.
Well, that means you just don't take it. But even this, and see, it's crazy because we used to allow some instructions when you're in the jury, because everything's about the jury charge. Okay, so even when I'm looking at these statutory provisions, when I get somebody walks in the office, right, and I take on their case, before I go to the DA's office, before I go to do anything, the first thing I look at, and even when I'm talking to them about whether or how much I'm going to charge sometimes, depending on what kind of crime it is, right, is what is a jury going to think about their situation, and two, the almost first thing I do is go and pull the jury instructions, because that's everything that you're going to be able to argue, and that's everything that's going to center around your case. You're going to have to build the entire case around the jury. So the jury instructions are extremely important, right, when you're talking about what is and what is not a good justifiable defense. And so when I look at the jury charge in these situations, we used to allow an instruction there that a person is allowed to carry a right to bear arms, Second Amendment, right? You're allowed to bear arms, and bearing arms in the situation, that's no longer allowed, okay? And then so since that's no longer allowed, and then they are going to say, you know, you'll probably get the argument that if they were violating this section, and then you can't argue, it's unclear whether we can even argue that anymore. So you are running a risk by taking a firearm, in other words, to a heated argument. But this is clearly, right, just saying that you cannot take a weapon. Right? You're not going to get a self-defense instruction for sure if you're taking a weapon that's in violation of these code sections.
Okay, I need in 30 seconds just a summary of what we just discussed, and then I want to make mention of the paragraph we're going to talk about next week.
Well, I think the best summary, right, is in the self-defense law itself, when it says a person who has a right to be at the location that they're at, and they haven't provoked the other person, and they're not otherwise engaged in criminal activity, right, does not have a duty to retreat before using deadly force. Right, that summarizes this whole statute right here. If you're doing what, if you're where you're supposed to be, doing what you're supposed to do, right, and not talking mess or doing anything else, right, that would, you know, start a fight, right, and somebody picks a fight with you and you use force, you're going to have a right to use that force, and you're not going to have to run from it.
Attorney Benton Ross Watson. Ross, it's always an action-packed, exciting segment with you. For those about to rock, he's rocking it all the time. But here's what we're going to do next week. It's Penal Code 931, paragraph C, the use of force to resist an arrest or search. And I think you said you had a lot of interesting things to talk about.
There's good things to talk about, too. I also want to talk about one case that I missed. It was about a hummingbird feeder dispute between two neighbors. Gosh, it was...
All right, we'll talk about that. Now, Ross, let everybody know once again how to get a hold of you.
105 East Main here in Cameron is my primary office location. You can call me on my cell, 254-455-0569. That's 254-455-0569. It's my personal number. I don't know why I give it out on the air, but feel free to call it. It's not going to have a voicemail. If you want to leave me an email, it's benton@watson.legal. benton@watson.legal. I appreciate it.
Ross, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. All right. Thanks.
All right, everybody. What we're going to do here, we're going to take somewhat of a short break. And when we come back, we're going to go over our topic of interest as to what's going on with Aaron's and High-Tech Adventures and get you up to date. And we'll get ready for the Voice of Law Enforcement at 11 o'clock. So we'll talk to you in just a minute.
Cavallino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cavallino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cavallino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures.
If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. That last segment was a recorded session between me and attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. I'm in the business of communication, and I screwed up this communication. He told me he wasn't going to be here, and I totally spaced it out, so that's why we played that repeated session. But it was a good one. I hope you got a lot out of it. Penal Code 931. Now, for things that are coming up and have come up with Aaron's, last night was our last round robin, or our latest round robin. And it was a lot of fun. A lot of people showed up. And I'll tell you, man, you get some really good shooters and they start spitting up on themselves and tripping up on themselves. So those of you who have a gun and carry a gun, you need to practice. Ladies' night is on the 17th. I'm doing a major advanced training seminar for a local church here in the Milam County area on the 18th. On that day, attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson will be guest hosting the show. Don't you know that's going to be fun? December 2nd, we have a co-ed advanced training seminar, and December 8th will be the next round robin. So we've got a lot of things going on. Go to aaronsgunshop.com to check out all that's happening. Make sure you check out the High Cap Adventure page and check out the testimonials. Show the ladies there. A lot of ladies have a hesitancy to take a class like this, but once they see the ladies coming from Midland and Odessa and all across West Texas and from all other parts, and they get to hear how the class was, it puts them at ease. So make sure they hear the testimonial page on that too. We're going to fade now into our tactical snacking segment with Janae Goodman, and this week, this Saturday, right now, it's going to be, if you got leftover candy from Halloween, she's going to give you some delicious recipes like Snickers pie and peanut butter cookies. So Joel, let's get Janae on the air.
Hello, my lovelies, and welcome back to another sweet segment of tactical snacking. I figured this was late, but it's true what they say, better late than never. Besides, I'm willing to bet there's somebody out there who is tired of looking at all that leftover Halloween candy. I know you don't have to justify to me that it was half off, but I've got you covered. My name is Janae Goodman, and today I'm going to give you a new spin on candy confections. So let's start off with the basics. Ice cream. Shaken, not stirred, just so we're clear. This neat experiment drops all the typical ice cream maker equipment and still allows for a creamy, delicious treat. For an 8-ounce serving, you will need 1 cup of half and half, 2 tablespoons of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and any of your favorite mix-ins and candies. Things like peanut butter cups, M&Ms, Mr. Good Bars, or Almond Joys. Heck, gummy bears if that's your sort of thing. Just about any softer candy or bar works here. Just make sure you chop them up, and keep in mind that your candy will harden because of the cold temperature. For your setup, you'll need 1 pint-sized Ziploc bag, 1 gallon-sized Ziploc bag, or a durable Tupperware container. Be mindful that thinner Tupperware can and will shatter due to the intense shaking. You'll also need 1/2 cup of kosher salt and plenty of ice cubes. If you feel more comfortable using multiple pint and gallon-sized bags, I really can't say I'd be upset with you. But first, you're going to put in your half and half, sugar, vanilla, and candy mix-ins into your pint-sized bag. Make sure to seal it up tight to avoid any spills. Go ahead and set that aside. Next, set up your freezer by filling up your gallon-sized bag or Tupperware container halfway with ice. Cover it with your salt and put in your pint-sized bag that you just prepared into the gallon-sized bag. Seal it tight, and now for the fun part. Shake, 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 shake it. Sorry, I love to sing and you'll learn to put up with it. You'll shake for about 5 to 10 minutes or until the ingredients in the pint-sized bag begin to harden. Take your pint-sized bag out of the gallon-sized bag and introduce your shaken ice cream to a bowl or grab a spoon and eat it directly from the bag. Not only do kids go crazy for this, but you also get a neat treat in the end. Sweet! How about some red hot cider? Add a small handful of cinnamon red hots to your mug for warm cider and you are truly in for a sweet treat. No, seriously, it's like getting a hug from fall itself. If cider isn't your thing, why not snuggle up with a cup of hot chocolate instead? All you need is 8 ounces of milk, 2 teaspoons of sugar, 1/3 of a cup of semi-sweet, dark, or milk chocolate pieces, 1/4 a teaspoon vanilla extract, and a small pinch of cinnamon and nutmeg. You'll heat your milk and sugar in a small pot over medium heat. Once the milk comes to a low simmer, remove it from the heat and mix in all of your other ingredients. This is my tried and true recipe, and you'll be crazy to go back to those just add hot water packets after you've given it a taste. Peanut butter and brownies. It is such a simple combination, and it's a shame I hadn't thought about it any sooner. Simply introduce Reese's Peanut Butter Cups to your favorite brownie recipes by putting them directly on top before you stick your pan of brownies in the oven. If you need a brownie recipe, email me. Let me know. I've got one on tap, and it is simply divine. I ran across a recipe for candy corn biscotti, and I just had to mention it. I can't take credit for this, as it comes straight from Francesco Quintano and Michael Schneider's blog, titled Food Nasty. Besides, what bag of treats is complete without the oh-so-famous candy corn? Unfortunately, I only have so much time in the world to share my recipes with you, so email me about it. Oh, and I can't forget about Snickers. No, Snickerdoodles. Oh, Snickery Doodles! There, that is a match made in heaven, and it is oh so easy to make. Chop your Snickers bar into a small square, freeze them for about 5 to 10 minutes, and surround them with your favorite Snickerdoodle recipe dough. Roll them into balls and dip them into cinnamon sugar, and toss them into a 350-degree oven for about 12 minutes or until they're just set. Oh yeah, that just happened. I've thrown plenty of treats into your bag today, so I get it if you didn't commit them all to memory. If you're up for trying one of these candy confections or you just need a recipe, don't be shy. Shoot me an email at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. Thanks for spending your morning with me, Janae Goodman, and I can't wait to see you next week. Until then, stay hungry, my friends. Yahoo.com. Thanks for spending your morning with me, Janae Goodman, and I can't wait to see you next week. Until then, stay hungry, my friends.
Our sales, service, maintenance, and supplies for our motorcycles, ATV, four trackers, and more. Stop by Two Wheel Customs, located on Highway 53 in Zapsikville.
Open Tuesday through Saturday.
Two Wheel Customs offers the best in repairs and maintenance on any make, model, or size of motorcycle. If you're looking to buy or sell your unit, David Trojan and his crew can take all the hassle of paperwork and displaying your motorcycle. If you're looking to buy, Two Wheel Customs always has vehicles on display for purchase. In addition, you can find a store full of variant apparel, everything from boots to helmets, along with a great inventory of accessories for your motorcycle. Give Two Wheel Customs a call at area code 254-760-2250. That's 254-760-2250. Two Wheel Customs on Highway 53 in Zapsikville.
Now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good, great morning on this Saturday. I hope you're doing great today. Here it is, the 11th day of November, 2017. You know, I've always talked about things that are important, not only to law enforcement, to criminal justice, to your safety, but today I want to do something a little bit different to start with. You know, today is Veterans Day, and we celebrate the veterans, those living and those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. I've had a lot of friends' fathers, my relatives who didn't come home from overseas, and those who came home and didn't come home from overseas. So what I want to do today, for about 4 minutes, if y'all indulge me, there's a particular song that I've heard, and I hear it played just about every time this time of year. And I'd like to start my show off this morning by doing that. And then when I get back from that, we're going to talk about 15 things you can do to take care of yourself. So if you'll indulge me, please, everybody, and listen to this song and listen to the words of the song, and then we'll get started with the show this morning.
Andrews Tower, good morning. Angel Flight Bravo 02, ready for takeoff. Angel Flight Bravo 02, you're number one for takeoff. Runway 25, get them home, boys.
All I ever wanted to do was fly, leave this world and live in the sky. I left the C-130 out of Fort Worth town. I go up some days, I don't want to come down. Well, I fly that plane, call the Angel Flight.
Was Reddy Foster, and like I said, as in immortal words of Matthew McConaughey, all right, all right, all right. I want to thank all you veterans out there, those that gave it all and those that got to come home. Now, what I'd like to do for the next few minutes is talk about some things that I think are really important. You know, I'm often asked here, especially in the last few years, about what can you do to make your physical security stronger. I thought about 15 things that we could do that, especially when we're traveling, here it is the holidays, and some things we could do to make ourselves safer. First of all, number one, never trust a door chain lock. Some of you have seen those door chain locks that you have the little flimsy lock that you put on one door and you think that's going to save you. It's not. Even amateurs can often undermine that. Matter of fact, when my son was 7 years old, we had one on our door, and he wanted to go outside, and he just pulled the whole door off. Don't trust the chain locks. I don't know how many of you have peepholes in your house, but take a chance sometimes. Go outside and look in. You can actually see inside your house through the peepholes that we use to look outside the house. It's not as well, not as easy to do, but if you have a peephole, if you go to a hotel somewhere, a motel, and you see that the peephole has been removed or it's something wrong with it, stuff a piece of some type of tissue into that hole so people can't see. It's true, it keeps you from seeing out, but you don't want people seeing in and seeing what you're doing inside your own abode. Third, keep your car key, that fob you carry with you, reachable from your bed, your night table, or a good storage location, wherever you sleep. Car fobs contain panic buttons. You can double it as a great alarm in case of an emergency. Nothing scares somebody off faster than a car horn going off. Pressing the panic button will cause your vehicle to repeatedly blast its horn and flash its headlights in most cases. If your car is in the driveway, it can draw attention to your location and hopefully scare would-be criminals away. Police responding to the call then can see your home much easier and much faster. A lot of people don't think about that. Of course, now, if you live in some place where you've got a lot of apartment complexes and things of that nature, that may not be quite the most advisable thing to do. But if you live in a house, if you live where you can, where you have a driveway of your own, keep your car fob next to your bed. Press it. Use it as if it was a panic alarm. Also, if you carry a physical car key, like most of us do, keep it in your hand when you're walking alone, especially in parking lots. I know a lot of people, a lot of females, more especially than males, are going to go shopping during the holiday season. And I had to refine that because I don't want to be a gender bias here. But having your key available in your hand reduces the time between when you can approach your car and when you can drive away. It also reduces your exposure to attack. Standing with your key, fumbling with your keys, fumbling with it to put it in the hole, right before with hands full of packages, it's a dangerous situation. There's also a side benefit to that that's very good. If you've got your key in your hand, it makes a wonderful weapon. To have that key sticking out between your forefinger and your middle finger, somebody walks up to you. Now, if it's your husband or if it's your girlfriend, you probably don't want to do this to them. But if it's somebody that's a bad guy, shoot straight for the eyes and the face of that key. Makes a great weapon. Next, also, and this is really important, set the home address in your smartphone, GPS, and other devices to an address near your home, but not necessarily your own personal home. Now, why do you want to do that then? Well, here's the key. If someone steals your phone or breaks in your car while you're away from home, you don't want the crook to attempt to rob you at your own place, own house, or call friends in the area to do so. Theoretically, any paperwork in a car that contains your home address should be kept locked up in the glove compartment to minimize the risk of anyone finding that information. It's an inconvenience, I realize that, folks, but security is somewhat of an inconvenience. But I want you to think about something. Think about how much of an inconvenience it's going to be if you're in the hospital, if your loved one's in the hospital, if you lose everything you've got. Make sure you take precautions ahead of time. Just like buying insurance, you don't buy insurance because you know it's going to happen. You buy insurance if it's going to happen. Same thing with security. Enable remote wipe for your smartphone. I know a lot of people say, what is that? Well, smart wipe, actually, or remote wipe, actually lets you take information off your phone. If it's stolen, you want to make sure that any sensitive information on your phone, from which, for example, your children's schedules, your insurance information, your banking information, can be wiped away from a remote location. Also, and here's the key, and this is probably one of the most important ones, don't overshare your information on social media. You know, I've often thought, you know, we could learn more about people by reading Facebook than we could ever spend by sitting and talking to them for a few days. people have a tendency to post vacation pictures, post everything about their family, their kids, everything else. Folks, think about this. If the bad guys can even walk to your house, how easy is it for them to Google your name from just any place? You know, I can take most names and I can Google them and I can find more about that person than I want to know about that person. You know, don't respond to social media invitations to events that involve all residents at your home. Doing so can let the public know in advance that nobody will be home at a certain time. There are so many other examples of what not to do on social media. The bottom line is this, folks. Think twice before posting. And whenever possible, use technology to address any mistakes in this regard. In other words, throw people off. Don't show them your family. Don't show them your information. Don't show them your car, your license plates, things of that nature. The next one is really important, folks. Lock up any dangerous medications that are targets for abuse. And you say, well, my family wouldn't abuse drugs. No, but how many people do you have coming into your house? How many people do you have maybe coming to work on something? Or how many visitors do you have come see you that need to go to the restroom? And yet you keep all your medicines in the restroom in the medicine cabinet. It's an invitation to have your medication stolen or tampered with. Have a place for your medications that's out of the ordinary and preferably in a locked location. Don't let anyone see your sensitive information into a computer device. With cameras, you know, cameras are not our friends anymore. It's important to block people's views of your hand when entering PIN numbers, passwords, alarm codes, your children's carpool pickup times, etc. Remember, high-resolution cameras like most of the iPhones and the Android phones have now can be seen clearly from far away and are now widely available. You may not even see a camera that is recording you, and that's important. Cover your cameras up. Cover the cameras in smartphones, laptops, tablets, smart televisions, etc. When you want to be sure that they can't record you. Left uncovered, they can record you without your even knowledge. And I know we're talking about maybe some kind of cyberspace stuff here, but there are so many things that can be done. Keep in mind that microphones can be activated by malware. They really can. Don't reveal sensitive information. Nobody needs no effects. Just never trust a phone call placed to your home phone or your motel room if you're out away, asking who's there. Never give people your information. Folks, I'm going to have to cut it off today. There's a couple more things I'd like to talk about, but we're going to do that at another time. This has been a busy day. Again, I want to wish all of you veterans out there the best. Godspeed to you, and thank you for your service.
For sales, service, maintenance, and supplies for motorcycles, ATV, Ford Trackers, and more, stop by Two Wheel Customs, located on Highway 53 in Zopchickville. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Two Wheel Customs offers the best in repairs and maintenance on any make, model, or size of motorcycle. If you're looking to buy or sell your unit, David Trojan and his crew can take all the hassle of paperwork and displaying your motorcycle. If you're looking to buy, Two Wheel Customs always has vehicles on display for purchase. In addition, you can find a store full of varying apparel, everything from boots to helmets, along with a great inventory of accessories for your motorcycle. Give Two Wheel Customs a call at area code 254-760-2250. That's 254-760-2250. Two Wheel Customs on Highway 53 in Zopchickville.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-4417.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, today is November 11, 2017, Veterans Day. We just heard from the voice of law enforcement, and I'm very excited to have a special guest on here today, Colby Breen. Colby, hey, Colby on the line?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to come and talk with us. We're going to be talking about, because I got you on because, one, I love what I'm reading about what you do and the training. I'm all into training. And because we had the church shooting last week, a lot of people are calling me. Churches are calling me. People are calling me about what to do, how to prepare. And you just seem to fit the bill here when it comes to information. So I'm going to pick your brain. But before we do that, Kobe, I want to tell everybody a little bit about you, who you are, your credentials, okay? So give me a second and while I promote you. Kobe Breen, he's got a long history, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to piecemeal his resume to you. Right now, he's an instructor at the Alert, which is Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Training, Response Training in San Marcos. He's an instructor for active shooter counterterrorism tactics for a government-funded facility based in San Marcos. He's helped develop the Advanced Level 2 course that incorporates medical skills and small team tactics. He was also with Triple Canopy, and he was in Baghdad, Iraq, was on Tactical Site Survey Advanced Team that was responsible for diagramming and securing venues for safe visits by Department of State dignitaries. And that comes in very important when it comes to securing your church. I mean, it's the same principles, but you're going to do it on a church level as compared to dignitaries. Also, he coordinated firearms training and range drills to train new and current team members on issued weapons. He was with Blackwater USA. He worked with Blackwater until his departure from Iraq in 2009 and was then picked up by Triple Canopy. His duties were to manage the team health care and injuries, as well as being involved in preparation of tactical site surveys of venues in and around Baghdad. He was with the Temple Police Department, SWAT. He was picked to join SWAT in 1999, stayed there until he left the department in 2006. He was on hundreds of high-risk warrants and room entries during this time and was also in the detective division for 4 years and was involved in all facets of investigations, including homicides, aggravated assaults, sexual assaults, and burglaries. He has many certifications, good education, and Kobe, welcome to the show, partner. How are you doing today?
Good, Matt. Thank you. That's a heck of an entry. I'm trying to live up to it all.
Well, man, you can't get these you can't get this on your criteria or your what's the word I'm looking for here? You can't get this in your history or your resume without doing it, and
right.
You can't be in the positions that you're in without knowing what you're doing. So, Kobe, I don't know where to go in this interview because there's so much to talk about. But let's start it off like this: we had the shooting in the church here in Texas. And because of that, all hell's breaking loose. And I have so many times when it comes to the school shootings or any other type of shooting, when you have an active shooter, it seems like everybody just loses their head because there has been no preparation and training. So with that, can you just start off this conversation as to where you want to go and I can start picking your brain and asking you questions as we go along?
Certainly. So we can start with basically what we like to tell people is at some extent, you're responsible for your own safety. Police, fire, EMS, all that will get there, but it takes time. The people that are perpetuating this it's generally not a happenstance event. The active shooter or the active killer, it doesn't have to be a shooter. It can be a stab. It can be a car. Anything like that. It's a planned event, and to have people that have no planning or training or mindset to deal with that, the attacker or the bad guy is already ahead of us at that level. So we like to preach it out as, hey, you're responsible for your own safety. The moniker that we put out is called avoid, deny, defend. There's others out there called run, hide, fight, and some other things, and that's all good. As long as you kind of think of those three things as avoid, what we're getting here is what you hear it. Try to get yourself out of the line of fire. Just move to somewhere else so you're not receiving those rounds. Deny, what we say is, then harden up the area that you're in, be it a room, be it an area, be it just a corner of a building. And then, of course, the last is defend, is everybody, you have a right to defend yourself. And you need to prepare yourself not just in the third defend, but also situation awareness. And dealing with the stressors that's going to happen, and then what happens when it's all over, when what I like to say is after the firing pin has stopped hitting the primer, what do we need to do? More work happens after that than than the initial put down.
All right, Kobe, let me ask you something. I mean, I'm pretty good with a firearm. I'm pretty good with my situational awareness. I'm pretty good at tactical situations. The whole works. You know, I've been blessed to be associated with people who do this kind of stuff. And my whole life seems to have been geared this way. So when you say avoid, deny, and all this, I have this immediate rub as to if I'm a licensed to carry person, or even if I'm not, if I've got access to something that can stop the threat, I'm engaging. I totally dig and totally understand the avoid part of it. But can you please clarify why you're saying avoid as compared to actually, if you have the means to do so, countering the situation?
By all means, we're saying to defend yourself. Some people may not want to take that step. Not everybody is willing to defend themselves or want to even think about that evil exists out there. So we're just giving you steps to be aware of the mindset, just the kind of the thinking around the whole aspect of it. We're not saying that you have to flee the area at all. We're just saying these are steps that you can use. Mm-hmm. If you think of it in a bigger picture, and where we put a lot of this training on is for schools and businesses and teaching their clientele or their students or their employees or anything is avoid it. And what we're saying there is, hey, get everybody into an area where they can then collectively and then start figuring out what's happening there. But yeah, man, I'm tracking you on the whole defend thing. I'm a big proponent of people being able to support themselves.
Okay, so what we're doing is we're breaking up, and I hate to make it sound like this, but we're breaking up people into categories, and that is those who are with it and those who haven't got a clue. And the ones who haven't got a clue on how to defend themselves basically just need to run for cover. But the ones who basically have a clue, that's twofold in itself. And you step in and tell me when I'm wrong at any moment, okay? But the people who have the ability to defend themselves either know what they're doing or think they know what they're doing. And it's the ones who think they know what they're doing are going to cause a lot of problems. So what can you tell us in a little bit more depth? Because this show is basically designed for the licensed carry holder person and somebody who truly wants to know what they're doing, get trained, and be an active person. What can you tell somebody who is willing, is ready to do? How should they act? How should they respond when law enforcement comes? So on and so forth.
So we're saying after the event has happened, after maybe the perpetrator is down or the bad guy's down or bad girl even is down.
No, actually, let's go a step before that. Let's say, you know, there's the opportunity where, I mean, what was that, the Florida bar where there's somebody in there? I mean, I know you're not supposed to take a weapon into a bar, but let's just say it's a facility where you could have a weapon and there's somebody shooting. I'm not cowering. I'm not going to cower. I'm going to figure it out and I'm taking down the threat. So when you have an individual who's of that mindset, is there any fine tuning that you could tell them as to what to do, how to do it? Or are you saying because law enforcement's about to come in there, you might be in the crossfire?
If you see a threat, I mean, you have the ability to deal with it. It's going to take the PD minutes to get there. The average response time of PD to this, we say 0 to 3 minutes, and that's zero because law enforcement is there, all right? And they're not saying that you can't support the LE at all. They're going to be stressed out. They're going to be dealing with a lot of emotions and adrenaline as well.
Right.
And the uniform or the badge always wins out. But in absence of that, you can certainly take care of supporting and helping the people around in that area. If you need to go up and deal with the threat, man, go up there and deal with it.
Can you give us from practical experience what might be some good things to do to support in a situation like that?
So what we like to tell people is, like I said, the badge or the uniform wins out. If somebody is calling in on 911, which is going to be hundreds of those coming in on that thing, and you just engage the person or are searching for the person, give your description out so they know. They're kind of starting to narrow down who the or starting to identify maybe who the good guys are in this. And so they see a guy wearing a black shirt with blue jeans and a certain description, you know, like a T-shirt or something. They see that as, hey, that's the guy, that's the caller we're looking for. He can guide us in the area. Just that kind of thing. And then if they tell you to holster the gun, by all means, holster the gun. Don't stand there and argue with them about that deal. You can always bring it out later. But let them go through their things, and then you can start assisting after that.
You know, it's funny. You would think that would be a known thing to do. Officer comes, tells you what to do. You put your gun away. But sometimes, you know, in the heat of the moment, when somebody's pumped up with adrenaline, they can't hear you. You're talking right to their face, and you're giving commands, and they're not hearing you.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I was looking on the. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that happens even to the LE side. You get the thing that's called auditory exclusion, where your heart rate gets up, you know, 160, 170 beats per minute, and the blood's going to the areas that's not needed, and unfortunately, the hearing is not one of them. So you have to kind of break that down. Realize people aren't going to be able to think, see, and hear as well as they think they're going to when all that adrenaline starts hitting.
Okay, now Colby, I've been on this show for quite a while, and I've made a lot of comments about this, and that is the media. I really don't like the media, the mainstream media. The media, I think, make this happen over and over and over again by copycat type of people. And I'm looking on your website, and I'm seeing no notoriety campaign. Why don't you talk to us about that so you can promote it to people, and maybe they'll get the bug to promote it to people, and hopefully it'll get up to the mainstream and say, okay, maybe we shouldn't do this. Go ahead and explain what that is and how we can maybe help.
I think you're talking about the don't name them.
That's
yeah, so don't ever let the person have the satisfaction of us uttering their names ever again. We should never speak of their name. We should speak of the victims. We can speak of the incident. But, I mean, I know the names. I studied the guys. We have to learn from history of how these are going on. What's their mindset? What's their causes? Why are they doing this? What targets are they picking and why? Things like that. That's all comes from just the research and the not the victimology, but just the studying of the event. So don't give them the satisfaction of saying that. There's been several briefings and on the news, and I can't think of the ones off top of my head. I want to say Orlando, and I know certain Vegas ones and Baton Rouge and Dallas. They got up there and said, we're not saying, excuse me, we're not going to say the guy's name. We're not going to give that person the satisfaction, excuse me, of ever uttering their name. Mm-hmm. And that's why.
I said this a bunch of times before, like you just said, it's almost like you don't want to say the victim's name either, because it's almost like you're giving any little minuscule piece of gratification to the persons who are plotting this or trying to do it and say, oh yeah, there's my body count. It's almost like you got to say, you know, this happened. Okay, let's cover it up. And then once it's all resolved, maybe we can do something. But the fever pitch of the media promoting this, if I was a psychopath and I wanted to hurt somebody, I'd say, hey, you know, I know all the major news networks are going to just like put me on TV 24/7. What a way to go in a blaze of glory, because I've been a jerk all my life. Nobody liked me. They never hung around me. I didn't like them. And that's a great way to do it, right?
And I've heard that as well. And to me, this is just me, it serves us no purpose to not say the victim's name. It's not their fault that they were there, that they were chosen to be part of this, and to deny their names being known as being a tragedy. I think that's that's kind of pushing the limits of, I don't want to say a bad move, but kind of, why not? If we just say the incident and we don't ever go into the humanology of it, we don't ever identify the people associated with it, we start losing that connection with
this
is a true tragic event. Yeah.
I agree with you. I may have not said it properly. What I was getting at was there's a certain point in time when it's happening to feverishly do it. I was just getting across it kind of gives them, even though you're not mentioning their name, it may still feed them. So I wasn't denying that. I was just saying it's still the way the media does it. The way the media does it is wrong. They just screw it up. And I agree with this website, what they're saying, and what you guys train. I think they just keep pushing it to the point where people say, hey, I'm going to become famous one way or another. So the avoid, deny, defend. You've got your website here, and there's all this information on there. Is there something I'm missing that you want to get out there that maybe the public can know, like the what do they call it, CRASE, CRASE?
We call it CRASE. We come up with, you know, these little acronyms that kind of people can remember. So CRASE is Civilian Responsive Active Shooter Events. And what we're doing is we train the police officers in your area, hopefully, and give them, hey, this is what you can train to the schools, to the businesses, to the hospitals, that what, hey, what can we do? Here's a way to do it. It's about, the class we put on is 4 hours, and the instructors, it's up to them of what they want to do, as long as they're covering a certain minimum out of there. It's, you know, so they're not doing just a 15-minute presentation. To me, people want to go and learn. Let's give them the chance they've got. They only have one or two touches with these people, and so let's give them the best information that we can.
Okay, on this course that you're talking about, though, it's open to law enforcement and military. Can you give us what it would take for somebody or a department, what it would take for them to get trainers like you, instructors like you, to come up and to go over all this stuff that you've got lots of experience in?
Certainly. So, well, what we limit it to is that's our instructor side of it. So we have the PD and or the military teaching the class, and then the school districts or hospitals, they want it, they can generally contact most likely the PD in their area has several guys done it, because we're doing it all over the United States currently. So there's agencies that are that already have guys that have gone through it. And if not, they can reach out to us here at Alert, ALERT.org, mm-hmm. and just go in there, find somebody to send an email to. Need to send it to me, that's awesome. And we will get it. We'll try to get you guys squared away on finding a class in your area.
Okay, Kobe, let's get a little bit more detail. I have lots of listeners, okay? And a lot of them are involved with schools and different businesses that would probably be very interested in this kind of stuff on a scale that you're talking about. So what, on the civilian side of it, what should the people on my side of the badge know or can get from your instruction? I know you're training law enforcement, but help me out here. How can we broadcast over the radio? Okay. Right, how can we broadcast over the radio now? What the civilian populace can learn from it, and how it can aid you.
So the class we put on, like I said, the CRACE classes, we're training the guys. We're essentially running them through blocks or modules of the class. They can put it out there however they want. So we put it to where you're sitting through it as a student. You know, take away your LE side and military side, and you're sitting through it as a student. What are things you would like to learn? And we put out this blast of information. So we talk about the identifiers. Usually there's a huge denial phase. Is this really happening? And we're seeing that there's a lot of social norming, you should say, of this isn't really happening.
This is really happening.
And once that first person kicks off and says, hey, this is really happening, we need to move, then the wheels start turning. But as soon as that social entity is accepted as, man, this is really bad, this is really
you know what's funny, Kobe?
It's kicking off.
You know what's funny? I'm like, I can't believe it's not happening, as compared to I can't believe this is happening. It's like, you know, I'm ready. I can't believe it's not happening. But give me, I'm trying to pull out of you a little bit more detail as to what, break down for me a class. Let's let the people hear, so they go, hey, man, sheriff, or hey, man, police chief, or hey, whoever, DPS, whoever's in charge of DPS, you need to get this class set up. We need to do this. Let them hear, if you don't mind, what goes through the class. Can you break it down a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, you have the normal in the end, and we're trying to get the, I don't want to say the buy-in, but the history of the events and why, what's the importance of learning from the history of these events. And then we have the social norming and the acceptance of it. And there's some videos and things out there that, yes, I remember those things. And that just kind of gives them the visual perspective of it. And then we start into the whole response. What can you do with it? What can you do with your, with your agent or with your employer or your business, and we hit on the avoid, deny, defend type things, and we talk about options that are inside there. So as soon as you identify it, this is just what we're saying as far as the moniker goes, is the avoid it. If you're standing in a stadium and something big and bad happens, like if we can just go back to Vegas, just use that in a kind of a big worst case scenario, an open air assault type. That is, if you're confined into that area and you're just staying there, you're just waiting for the incident to end, and it's going to take minutes for it to end. Once people started realizing what was happening, and started, and the police were there, and they started realizing what was happening, identifying where the echoes are coming from, where's the blast waves coming from? I'm sorry, not blast waves, not IEDs. The report of the rifle, where are those coming from?
Right.
It took in the time space continuum, it takes a while to get there, and in that time, you can utilize that avoid, that deny, that area, and then they got two areas. You know, they're behind concrete pillars. They're behind all these road construction things over there, and I believe they even broke into the airport tarmac area to get behind some of the things there. And they were stopping air traffic to go inside there. So that just not only takes place in that one little entity, it starts affecting everything around that. Mm-hmm. And once they got there, they were essentially defending. There was people that were stepping up. Get behind me. We will protect you. We're not sure what exactly going on, but we know whatever it is, it's not going to happen in this area, because we'll do what we need to. And then that's taken away, we'll say, the target of opportunity out of those guys' perspective. And again, that's on the big case scenario. The national average of incidents is about 4 to 5 people being shot during an active shooter event. And so what we're seeing here lately is these big numbers, these big events. And it is, as long as when people start identifying and realizing what's happening, and they're doing something collectively, as long as we can speed that process up, we can get people to start moving, start taking care of themselves, we will get there eventually. We're coming. Believe me, we're coming. And we will do everything we can to help you. As long as you're not making it harder for us to get there, we will do everything we can to get you guys out of there. To get the citizens and things out of there.
Sure. Kobe, I've got a question. I don't know if you can answer it or not, but I know weapons. I know rate of fire. I know the sounds of guns, AKs, ARs. I know, you know, like I said, the rate of fire. I know echo effect. I know sound and time and distance and delay in the sound as compared to seeing flashes of lights. I'm not stupid, okay? Mm-hmm. So the question I'm going to ask you, I don't know if you can answer it. It may make it sound like I'm weird, but it's okay. It won't be the first time. Mandalay Bay. Mandalay Bay. Mm-hmm. I believe multiple shooters, and I'll tell you why. Because of all the YouTube videos of people's cell phones, of different people put up almost at the same time, there was no time to manipulate or mess with it. I'm getting a taxi driver, and I hear the gunfire directly above him. He actually sees the flashes coming out of the window as he's pulling into the parking lot, and then there's a delay, and then you hear the gunfire coming from a distance. Anything you can say as to one or two shooters based on your experience on that? Because I see multiple shooters.
So I've read the reports. I've seen the videos. There is a really good one, and I hate to give benefit to the New York Times, but if you search New York Times Vegas shooting incident, they have about 11-minute video montage of things that they put together, and they talk about why and where the angles and all this from. So you had the big sound of the rifle report outside, and then it was muffled, and they're talking about why it was muffled and everything in there. Everything I've seen, no shooter.
Okay.
And so that's my belief now until proven otherwise. It's taken a while, but everything that I've seen, we've seen, and being told, it's a single shooter.
Okay, I'm not gonna.
You can't go anywhere. Yeah, you can't go anywhere in Vegas without being recorded.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they have that. They have that out there. It'll get to us eventually.
Okay, I'm not going to go into any further. I just like, because stuff I do it as an exercise. I'm thinking, okay, that was not a gun. This was its rate of fire. Here's where it's located based on sound. So I'm always trying to do that. And since I got you online, I thought, what the heck? Well, let me ask you.
Yeah. So let me touch on that. Two shooters. So we're seeing in about 12 years of studying this, roughly early 2000s to 2012, 2013, maybe even a little bit sooner, we're seeing 98% of the incident as a single shooter. 98% of the time, it's a single shooter. And when there's two shooters, we're seeing them, and they're usually together because they have that mental connection. They don't want to leave their wingman. They don't want to leave their buddy. type thing. The San Bernardino incident, that was a two shooters thing, the Boston bombing. They were apart and they came together when they were trying to flee. Columbine, back to the first incidents of all this in the 90s, two shooters, but they stayed together. So we're seeing that as everybody talks about second shooter, and it may come down to that. But what we're seeing in the research is 98% of the time, single shooter. Roughly 2 to 3% of the time, it's two when they're still working together.
Yeah, I can't argue that, because what you said, I'm going, yeah, I agree. I acknowledge it about where you want to get back together and so on and so forth. It just on that one, it looked kind of funny. So that's why I was asking it.
Yeah. It's crazy, and people have asked us about the there, man, and you're standing us and you're around that glassery of stuff and you hear the echo of the siren coming off all those buildings.
Well, I wasn't going in that direction. I was going about the video that showed the flash coming out of like a fourth or fifth story window. Let's put that as aside for a second. Let me ask you this, because we got you on for about this program that you do. Besides denial of people, what do you think is the biggest problem when it comes to schools or corporate that gets them in these positions? Is it because they're not allowed to have guns on the property, so if somebody comes in with a gun, they can defend themselves? What do you think is the biggest problem besides denial?
So let me put it this way. This is one thing we talk about. So even schools still today are trained in fire drills. And we will ask them, when's the last time a school was burned down with people inside? And it's just ingrained of the whole fire drill thing. And so it's kind of refusal to accept that we can be a target. It's not going to happen here. It won't happen here. So again, it's the denial, not necessarily the start of the incident, but it's the, it's not going to happen here. It's not going to happen in small town areas. So where that church shooting happened, that's about 20 minutes from where I am now. It's very close to where our center is in San Marcos. It can happen virtually anywhere. I mean, people in Paris never thought it would happen. It would happen to them.
I had a question that I was talking about. You said something. And just in your opinion, I know it can happen anywhere, but in your opinion, where do you? I don't know if I even want to ask this, but where do you think it could be more devastating, in a large city or a small town? And I'll tell you why I asked it, because a large city, lots of people, lots of law enforcement, it might be able to respond quicker. Small town, never happens here, and all of a sudden, bam, it happens. Are we caught off guard? What's your opinion?
I don't want to give away any intel that we're seeing out there, but I mean, at some point, you almost have to think like the bad guy, all right? And I don't want everybody to go around and start thinking like, oh, I'm a active killer now. What would I do? But you almost have to think of where are they likely to strike? What are they trying to get out of this? And the sole purpose of an active killer, active shooter event is to have the numbers, all right? And so they can become gain more notoriety over more numbers and more worse than the previous one. So anytime there's a major event, we see copycats after that.
Yeah, I know, but 26 people in a church. 26 people in a church is anywhere across the country, you know, so it could happen anywhere.
Yes, sir. So, to me, what keeps me up at night is when it's going to be the two to three shooters that are working in tandem, and it's called a symphonic event, or it's several different well planned, well staged attacks.
Right. You ever seen that movie Nighthawks with Stallone?
The old one.
I love that movie because you've got the British guy comes in trying to teach everybody, you've got to think like the enemy. You've got to think like the terrorist. Because if you can think like them, you can hopefully predict. That's what you're doing, because I know you're telling me you're studying these guys. You got to learn how they think and all this kind of stuff. If you don't know how they think and what they believe, you can't cut them off. So you got to think like the bad guy.
Because I mean, they're studying events, and they don't go into this blind. They study what has happened before. You look at the Virginia Tech incident. He learned from incidents before. That's how the doors were barricaded.
That's right.
Incidents that just happened before that, and everybody goes back to the Columbine incident. How did two high school kids create such devastation? It's because they had the mindset, and that's what they wanted to do. And people, there's bad people around us everywhere, and that's where we go back to. You have the right to defend yourself. not by all means. Mm-hmm. And if you see it start and you're in their crosshairs, so to say, man, by all means, take action to do what you need to do to save yourself, save your friends, your people around you.
Okay, Kobe, I've got about a minute left. What would you like to say in this last minute? I don't know if you want to promote what you're schooling there or whatever, but say what you want to say. If you want to have people contact you, tell them how to do so, and we'll take it from there.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think everybody's got social media now. I'm not even sure where all we are. I know we're on Facebook. I know alertalerrt.org. Go on there, look around. You're a police military. Look on there for classes. All our classes are grant funded, so it doesn't cost the police anything. So we always try to get police to go to the classes. Police don't especially want to spend money on classes, but they'll go to the ones they're already taken care of. So when we first started it, that's we first started in the early 2000s. That's how we were going to.
Well, I'm hoping those who are listening here in this broadcast area will get on our local law enforcement and say, hey, you know, there's a great program here. Let's set it up. I'd love to have you out here. And if that happens, we'll promote it big time. But, Kobe, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy day to come on this radio show and give us some insight as to what to do, how to handle things, or where to go for information. I want to thank you very much for doing that.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Hope I didn't mess it up too bad.
No, man, you did pretty good, man. Hey, I'll have this on Facebook probably Monday or Tuesday, and I'll turn it into a YouTube video too as well if you want to plug into it and just let people hear what you got to say, so on and so forth. So stay tuned to my website, aaronsgunshop.com. But until then, Kobe, I'll talk to you soon. You take care of yourself, and we'll see you on the other side, okay?
Yes, sir. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Off air.
Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Cabellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cabellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cabellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Centex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Centex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. Centex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Centex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's 2017, November 11th, and I'm running out of time here. I want to go into my product spotlight real quick before I get Master Cindy Key on for martial arts. This is sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, and we're going over the Remington RN380 pistol. Go to aaronsgunshop.com's Facebook page to take a look at the picture. But I got a review on here from the AmericanRifleman.org. It goes, in 2014, Remington purchased New York-based handgun manufacturer Rohrbruch, or whoever you say it, which had made a name for itself in the pocket-size R38 380 semi-automatic 380 ACP pistol, and that the nearly identical R9 in 9mm Luger. The acquisition allowed Remington to revise the R380, resulting in the RM380 reviewed here. Manufactured at Remington's Huntsville, Alabama facility, the new pistol appears virtually identical to the Rohrbruch's R380 R9. However, there are some subtle and not so subtle differences between them. Because the gun is designed to be both a both print and snag free, the slide's edges have been thoroughly contoured. Milled into the slide are no frills, low profile sights. The front consists of a simple 0.110 inches wide ramp, while the rear of the notch style is 0.135 inch opening. God, this is hard to say with all these numbers. There are no colored outlines or fiber optic or tritium sights. However, the sights are easy and quick to acquire, as well as robust. The extractor lies in a machine pocket to the rear lower ejection port, and the Antigua ejector is on the left wall of the slide. The design of the slide and barrel is such that the loaded round is visible from above and from the side. Unlike many 380 ACP chamber pocket pistols with polymer frames, the RM380's frame is machined from durable, low-maintenance, aircraft-grade aluminum that is anodized black. Again, care has been taken to sculpt the frame so that there's nothing to snag on. Now, those familiar with the R380 and the R9 pistols will instantly recognize that the Remington RM3380, a bilateral low-profile magazine release button, has been replaced with the easy push button magazine release on the side of the gun. Moreover, there's a fully functional slide stop. The slide can be locked open and will automatically do so after the last round is fired. Because there's no external safety, the triggers of the long double action only design. On the test gun, the trigger broke after a protracted yet smooth pull at an average of 9 pounds, which is safe for a gun like that. In the end, after all this review, the Remington RM380, to be a good contestant in the increasingly crowded field of pocket-sized carry pistols, works without issues straight out of the box. Moreover, with a suggested retail price of $436 and considering its pedigree, it's no stretch to call the RM380 a bargain. Now, ANC Firearms has it right now for $379. If you're looking for a pocket pistol with a credible name, the Remington RM380 at ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring in Master Cindy Key, and we're going to have her tell us her words of wisdom when it comes to self-defense and martial arts. What are you talking about today, Ms. Key?
Key defense.
Is that a key defense for Master Cindy Key? Check it out. Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to talk about my two favorite ways to defend with a key. A lot of martial artists say to hold it in your finger, but I'm going to tell you what. Trying to figure out as you're walking to your car where to put these keys. You're going to get attacked if you are not trained. I know what to do, but somebody that's untrained is going to be figuring out, okay, where do I put these? How do I do this? I don't like that. One key, one defense. This is my favorite way. You put it in your lock this way. This is a very good way to defend with it. You hold the, if you have a clicker like this, put it in the middle of your hand so that it's solid. Your thumb and your forefinger make it secure. Now, this is how we put the key in our door lock. If they come up to you before you get to your car, you have striking, soft spots, throat, eyes, rake the face. This is hard. The bottom of this is hard. You can hit them with a hammer fist. The bottom of the changer, the opener, remote. Yes, the remote. Remote, that's the word. But I really like this one-handed defense. If they come up from behind, if you are here putting the key in the lock, you still have the bottom of the remote to strike the groin. You can come back up and hit them in the face. If they grab your hand, Matt, can I use you? If they grab the hand that you're putting the key in, then you kind of have to do something else. I'm going to use legs. I'm going to strike with my hand. But if he grabs my other hand, because if my key's over here, if he grabs my other hand, then I'm going to come in here and I'm going to stab and rake.
That would hurt.
It would hurt.
She's just nicely doing it. It hurts.
It would hurt. But anyway, again, hold it secure. I have, this is mine.
I have a bunch of keys. So if you're like me and you have a bunch of keys, you will pick one. Just pick one. With this one, I can sling, which is basically like raking, too. So if you have a bunch, it's okay. You don't have to take one off and just have a bunch. So I'll rake and then I'll strike.
I don't care who you are. When something's like raking across your face, you're going to want to defend yourself.
You are. You are. But anyway, thumb, forefinger, solid, striking, striking, soft spots, and run.
You know, isn't that kind of like a Coubertin only?
Yes.
Okay. Coubertin, look it up. Google. It's a great thing. How much time I got, Joel? 40 seconds. Miss Key, tell them how to get a hold of you.
My number is 254-721-2775. I have a Facebook page under my name and a Facebook page under Central Texas Martial Arts. Come look us up.
And I'll have this on video so you can look at it. I know it was pretty, some things were vague in the terminology, but in the video, you'll be able to see what she's doing exactly and you'll know exactly what to do. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next week, keep your powder dry and God bless.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Parades and ceremonies, it's Veterans Day. At Arlington National Cemetery, Vice President Pence addressing the assembled veterans.
This is the land of the free because it's still the home of the brave, and you, our veterans, are our brave.
I'm Bruce Marcus in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Veterans honored at the local high school say the greater honor was serving their country.
So many times people will say, thank you for your service. To me, the answer is, it was a privilege and an honor to do so.
I'm very patriotic. I love my country. I love my flag, and there isn't anything I wouldn't